Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
A word of warning. This podcast explores graphic and disturbing stories and includes some strong language. It therefore may not be suitable for our young listeners or other folks who may find it disturbing.
Hello and welcome to True Crime Daily, the podcast covering high profile and under the radar cases from across the country every week. We are recording this on March 16th, 2021. I'm your host, Anna Garcia, and our guest host today is former homicide detective Luis Bolaños. Luis has more than 30 years experience in law enforcement, including undercover work with the DEA at the time when he was investigating drug cartels, and he now works as a private investigator. I asked Luis to join us today for this special edition of True Crime Daily, the podcast, because frankly, we need your expertise here. We absolutely do. Welcome, Luis. You're a friend. Looking forward to hearing your guidance and to help us explain what is going on, because this is the other pandemic that we are faced
absolutely,
with.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
This episode is focused on one case, which has been making massive headlines. And it is a crime that is frankly happening in every city, in every town, every day, multiple times a day. That is a tragedy that we cannot continue to allow to happen. We're talking very specifically, though, about the case of the 16-year-old son of nationally recognized relationship expert Dr. Laura Berman. Her son, Sammy Chapman, died after allegedly ordering drugs from a dealer on Snapchat. The family says that Sammy accidentally overdosed because one of the pills was allegedly laced with fentanyl. The Santa Monica Police Department is investigating Sammy's death and has told us that Snapchat has cooperated fully and continues to do so, and that the investigation is ongoing. Luis, I mean, this is very new. This death happened in February. The family has been incredible in talking to the public and their kindness. Their grace under unfathomable pain.
It's amazing how they've been able to turn their pain into purpose, as you're going to see. And I just want to give you a little background on how I came in contact with them, and why this case is unique from other cases that we typically take on and try to spearhead here. But it was a mutual friend of ours that asked me, just a couple days after Sammy's death, their son's death, to chat with them and share whatever I could to help point them in whatever direction was most comfortable in necessary, and to see what was being done correctly and what wasn't, or just answer questions, or just to be there for them. And what I found very soon in my conversations with Sammy's parents, Sam and Laura, was And at the end of the phone call, I had to take a huge deep breath. Every call I have with them is that it took them a very short time to become extremely educated in the pandemic of the national pandemic of fentanyl. I didn't know. And we work very hard here to stay on top of things that are dangerous to kids. If it comes to children, we're on top of it. We'll do anything we can to protect any and all of them. And fentanyl was just not on my radar. I missed that one. And the more research and the more information that I would, every time I had a conversation where I thought I would be able to help them and give them some advice, I found myself just being inundated with the stuff that they were able to bring to the forefront. And with just a little bit of research online and talking to my friends in law enforcement who are working cartels and people who are manufacturing fentanyl, it became incredibly obvious that this is probably the number one focus of all major narcotics teams, DEA, FBI, county, state police. They are starting to become aware, hopefully sooner than I was, as to the magnitude of this and how and why it needs to be addressed. Because since I first spoke to Sammy's parents a few weeks ago, I have spoken with about a half a dozen other parents whose children have died in very similar same method. So change the name, change the place.
Children who have died since Sammy. Unbearable. So for those of you who may not know, Dr. Laura Berman is a therapist and a relationship expert who is a regular contributor to numerous television shows. She has been in your house. If you didn't recognize her, you will when she comes on in a few minutes. She is the author of several best-selling books. Her very latest book is Quantum Love. She is an award-winning host of multiple types of shows, and her latest endeavor is a new podcast called Language of Love. Dr. Laura has two masters and a PhD, right? When we think of someone who is like the most knowledgeable human being on this earth, that's this family, right? Access. But the most important thing is that Laura is a mother of three. Laura and her husband, Sam Chapman, have suffered the loss that every parent fears. A little more than a month ago, on February 7th, their teen son died. 16-year-old Sammy died of an accidental overdose from drugs. The parents believe that the drugs may have even been delivered very close to the house. That's how this happened. The family discovered Sammy on a Sunday night, passed out on the floor of his bedroom. They called 911, the police, the paramedics arrived, but it was too late. It was too late. Since that horrible moment that Sammy passed, Sammy's parents, Laura and Samuel, who are here with us right now, have waged a public war using every tool that they have, using every energy in their body to prevent this from happening to another family, to save another child, and at the same time trying to get justice for their own son and find the killer of their child. Joining us now are Sammy's parents, Dr. Laura Berman and Samuel Chapman. My deepest, deepest condolences.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
I am so sorry for your loss, and I am at a loss of words. And, you know, I'm a parent. Lewis is a parent to your parents. It is very painful. And I am so impressed with the grace with which you have opened your hearts in this tragedy for the rest of us. Because I cannot believe that there isn't one family out there that isn't touched by this.
Yeah, that was not really even my intention or expectation. You know, on the night that Sammy died, while the police were still in the house, and I had gotten in touch with Sammy's friend and discovered through his friend, who sent me the screenshot that Sammy had sent him, that he had gotten these drugs through this ad on Snapchat for a dealer that had the dealer's handle on Snapchat and Twitter. I went running to the police, who were still in my house waiting for the coroner, and said, look, you know, here he is. And they said, you know, we're sorry, don't get your hopes up. You know, social media doesn't help us really find these people. All they do is take the profile down, but then that person just pops right back up with a brand new screen name, and we haven't ever been able to get any cooperation from them. So then I started not only just almost dying of grief, as you can imagine, but the helplessness and rage kicked in. And that was too much to hold. And my husband, who knows me and knows that I tend to share almost everything, said, well, maybe at least if, because, you know, they basically said our hands are tied. We probably won't be back for months, if at all, depending on the toxicology reports, which are backed up in the, you know, in the lab. So it could take months and months. I needed to do something because the sky was now out there. And so I made a post on Instagram, just thinking that at least I could get the word out there to my followers. And it just exploded. I had never heard of fentanyl before this. I certainly didn't know that how prevalent it is and how dangerous it is and how many kids are dying from it. And since then, I very quickly, we had to make a support group on Facebook because hundreds and hundreds of parents were reaching out to me with the same story. And there's now over 10,000 parents on there who are telling the same story. It just takes Sammy's name away, take the state or city, change them out, and it's the same story. Great kids, young adults, doing well in life, wanting to experiment, doing something stupid and impulsive during the shutdown where they can't entertain themselves any other way, thought they were taking Xanax, Percocet, you know, pick your stupid poison, but it was really fentanyl, all fentanyl or fentanyl laced. And from the dealer's perspective, it either makes for a great customer because fentanyl is twice as addictive as heroin. So if our boy had lived, he would have been a, you know, like a heroin addict times two after this. So that's a great customer for them if it doesn't kill them, and they don't care whether it kills them. And it has been an awe. I just can't even believe it is taking young adults and children out. I mean, they are being killed all over the country. And I was astounded by that. And so it doesn't help the grief to be out there talking about this, but it significantly helps the helplessness and rage, which makes the grief a lot easier to hold.
Sam, can you tell us, since we're waiting on the toxicology reports, how did you figure out that it could be fentanyl? Did the police tell you that that was very likely, or where did this information come from?
So we found him on his back having aspirated his own vomit. And this is what happens with fentanyl. Your respiration slows down almost all the way, and they pass out and they throw up and they choke on their vomit. And so that's what happened to him. And college kids who use fentanyl intentionally are now putting backpacks on frontwise so that if they get so wasted that they fall over, they do what they call turtling, and they fall forward. So if they vomit, they don't aspirate their own vomit. So that's what we walked in on. Had to resuscitate my own son, or at least try to, until the paramedics got here, and am dealing with terrible PTSD from that. It's just, no one should have to go through.
I am so sorry. I said to your wife on the phone a week or two ago, I said, I don't even know how you lift your head off the pillow. I just don't know. And you have, you know, you have a family, you have other children who are depending on you.
That's how.
Yeah.
I just don't know. So your son's friend was able to give you some information as far as that image, which we have, and we're going to show. And because we do both, you know, some people just listen to us, some people watch us. I'm going to describe the screenshot that we'll be putting up. Now, this is a screenshot. It's of a menu, and it even says menu at the very top of it. And then it lists things like Ambien, Percocet, Adderall, among others. And on the background of this image is an open prescription bottle. And as part of the advertising, it actually says LA County delivery and nationwide shipping. And then on the bottom it actually says low cost, low stress, highest highs. Mm-hmm. And what is even more revolting is that it's designed with what I would call Easter colors, mm-hmm. right? Like the colors of innocence, pastels.
It's friendly.
It's friendly. Yes, Dr. Laura. That's what it is.
Friendly. That's one of the most disgusting parts of it. And, you know, our child was sheltering at home. You know, he was in his room. He was in remote school. He couldn't play on the football team. He couldn't be with his friends because we're in lockdown. And he was able, we've been able to put together the pieces mostly through his best friend who sent us this screenshot that Sammy had sent him that he had gone out after we were asleep, you know, snuck out the back door and met the dealer and got the drugs. And what is happening and what I've learned, we've learned more about fentanyl than we ever wanted to know, is that, you know, it's being put in absolutely everything. And it's super cheap and super addictive. You know, it no longer comes, it's a synthetic opioid that primarily comes from China. And since it can't come directly into the United States anymore, it comes into Mexico where there are deals with the Mexican cartels who have laboratories where they make things that look exactly like Percocet, Xanax, Coke, whatever. And it's either all fentanyl or has enough fentanyl in there to make it cheaper and more addictive if it doesn't kill you. And they don't care either way. No harm, no foul for them.
What is so disturbing to me is, you know, for no matter which generation, I believe most of us are from the same generation here, is that in our own growing up in teen years, there was always the threat of drugs. There was always the problem, you know, whether it was advertised or, you know, I remember when Craigslist started earlier in my career, and I spent so much time doing stories about how they're selling drugs on Craigslist and the police are trying to track them down, but it's so hard because they keep changing their phone numbers, right? That was old school when you had a phone number, you know, then you see the beginnings of, you know, the private chat rooms, right? And then we saw the drug trade moving on to that. And then social media. I mean, however it is that people communicate is how this thing just permeates. As we progress, they progress, right?
There's a program called BARC that allows parents to monitor any social media their kids are on, except Instagram and Snapchat, because they say their operating systems don't allow for it. Well, change the operating system and allow the parents to monitor. That is critical. Without civil liability, we need help monitoring our kids.
Yeah.
So our advice is, since we pay for the devices, don't give your kid or let your kid keep a computer or a phone without getting their username and passwords for the device and for all social media. And then it's up to your parenting style, whether you check all the time because you're worried your kid's doing drugs, or you just make sure the passwords are working and you use it if they don't show up at 2 a.m. one day. Yeah. But you've got that safety and you've got that oversight, and that alone will make your children behave differently on social media. And it's a must.
Yeah.
With the platforms and their immunity, it's up to the parents to take control until the law can be changed.
Yeah,
but it's so hard because, like, as you're describing how after you were asleep that Sammy stepped out. I mean, my son is now 22. I can tell you when he was about a little even younger than Sammy's age, a story that I uncovered as his investigative mother when he was over at his father's house. He actually ordered an Uber, went to a party, came home, and his dad didn't even know it.
Yeah.
Okay. Under the noses of parents.
Well, that, yes. And we were extremely on top of him and protective and informed and careful and a million conversations. And, you know, I also don't know an adult our age who didn't do some stupid stuff and experiment with some stupid stuff when they were younger. The difference now is that it is fatal. Potentially, very likely fatal. And you're right that you can't, you know, there's only so much you can do. And if this hadn't happened to us, you know, the prior us would have try to advocate for our child's privacy, especially when we're in lockdown and, you know, he's sheltering at home in his room. What trouble can he get into other than all the conversations we have about naked pictures or inappropriate comments or whatever? But like, that's the worst that can happen, right? The problem is that that's not the worst that can happen. And I don't care about their privacy. I care about them staying alive. And we didn't want to fight that battle before. We thought, oh, his privacy is important and he needs to feel, forget it, you know? And I think parents don't want to have that battle with their kids. And of course, that alone isn't going to, you know, be an ironclad protection device, but it sure goes a long way.
We talked to Snapchat yesterday before this program to raise some of your concerns. And they gave us a statement. And I think that, well, of course, we're going to read their statement. And they tried to give us some background that they said, for example, that in their terms and in their guidelines, that they make it clear that this illicit activity is not permitted. But let me read you the statement. This is from Snapchat. And this is a statement from the director of communications at Snap Inc., which is the parent company of Snapchat. And the person that we talked to and provided this statement is Rachel Rackinson. Our deepest sympathies are with the family and friends of Samuel Berman Chapman, and we are devastated by his promising life cut short. We are actively assisting the Santa Monica Police Department with their investigation and are committed to working with law enforcement in all instances where Snapchat is used for illegal purposes. For us, nothing is more important than the safety of Snapchat users, and we have zero tolerance for using Snapchat for illicit purposes, including to buy or sell drugs. It is firmly against our community guidelines and terms of service, and we aggressively enforce against these violations. We try to be as proactive as possible in detecting, preventing, and acting on this type of abuse. But we know drug dealers are constantly evolving how they try to evade the rules on many platforms. We are constantly improving our capabilities to fight this illegal activity and to raise awareness about the threats of fentanyl in an effort to save lives. We also got a statement from the police because we also asked the police for an update on Sammy's investigation. And we also asked them specifically about cooperation. So please stand by while I get you that. This is from the Santa Monica Police Department. This is from Lieutenant Rudy Flores. We would like to express to the family how deeply sorry we are about the loss of Sammy. This was indeed a tragic event, which has also impacted the responding officers. It is never easy to deal with the death of a young individual. This continues to be an ongoing and active investigation. We appreciate that you respect the fact that we are unable to provide details of where we are with it, but they made it absolutely clear that they can verify that Snapchat has been actively cooperating with them from the very beginning and continues to do so. And that is according to the Santa Monica Police Department. And so, we are also going to put up a phone number for tips on your son's case that the police have asked us to share, which we will be doing.
So those same Santa Monica police told us that they no longer call the social media platforms for help because they won't get any. And they told us they wouldn't be back for months, if at all, about our son's death. And then the local news carried this on a number of stations as the top story, and they were back the next day. So we've looked into it, and we do understand that the social media platforms help the DEA, and they have a better experience on a federal level, but that local police get frozen out. And I can tell you that we need our son's phone unlocked. He has an iPhone, but Apple requires a death certificate and a court order for us to get the phone unlocked, plus his Apple ID, which is trapped inside the phone. It's very difficult to achieve in a pandemic, but it feels like the police should just be able to call Apple and say, we've got a dead child, open up his phone. You know, how do we get to the point where our children are not being protected by big technology companies and they use free speech as this blanket to allow crime to pass through their platforms as if they're bulletin boards, innocent bulletin boards that have no idea what's being put up on them.
What I would like is for all social media platforms to care more about their users than how many users they have. And it is not enough. It's lovely that you take down a profile when you discover someone is, breaking the law. Okay, fine. Keep doing that. But more importantly, change your protocols, change your user agreements, and, get with it and help law enforcement catch these criminals when they are using your platform to prey on our children.
The Senate in California is considering Bill number 350. And what it does is it delivers the warning to drug dealers when they get caught the first time that dealing drugs is a risk to life. And this is as a result of the fentanyl poisonings around the country. And so this is like what happens with a DUI. You get read this warning and you have to sign it to get out of court, right? And then if you do it a second time, they can convict you for murder because you've acknowledged that this is a risk to life and you did it a second time. So this sort of bill needs to go across the country and be accepted by the California Senate and then the House and signed by the governor. But it's a model for the rest of the country to help police. And I think if you ask the police, you would find that that would be an enormous help in what they're trying to do right now.
Are the two of you now with your very strong voices advocating for these law changes and policy changes, and how are you being received?
We have been, and I think that people are reluctant to change, especially on the national level.
Yeah, and in the meantime, we are just trying to get the word out there so that parents can educate themselves and so that they can use our son as a teachable moment, because anyone who has a kid knows, certainly a teenager knows, that we have very little credibility with them, but their peers do. And we have heard from many parents around the country that they have used our son's story. They have sat their kids down and had them listen to the podcast or watch the interview or whatever it was. And, and that it has really shaken their children because they can see themselves in our son.
Lewis, what do you think the chances are of getting justice here?
Justice is such a broad term. I think it's going to happen in some of these fentanyl cases. This is starting to come to the forefront of law enforcement and the prosecution and the prosecutor's office. I want to address two things. When Sam and Laura brought up the menu that was on Snapchat that Sammy used to make this purchase. I want to go back to that because I believe, and in speaking to my friends and contacts in law enforcement, that menu is still key. It's still a vital tool in potentially identifying the individuals responsible for Sammy's death. That's part of it. There is a forensic side, the forensic computer analysis of obtaining the metadata, and that thing was taken down within 24 hours. I'm told typically those menus have a shelf life of 24 to 48 hours. And in that time, they make hundreds, if not thousands, of sales of fentanyl-laced counterfeit drugs. So I think getting that menu out there and keeping it out front, someone's going to recognize it because we've just talked about it. You just described the uniqueness of that specific menu or any menu that these clowns use. And I'm talking just about sales in Southern California. So that's number one. The bill that Sam and Laura were just talking about to have the ability to prosecute these individuals that are in this food chain, responsible for all the way from manufacturing to distribution to sales. There's something happening in Riverside County as recent as 3 weeks ago that kind of addresses that. It's a different lane. So the more lanes, the bigger shotgun powder we can put out there to address this epidemic, this nightmare that's happening with our kids, the better. And that is in Riverside County. And there's something called the Watson murder rule. And it's very similar to what Sam was just talking about. And this is something that Riverside County Prosecutor's Office is using right now to prosecute three individuals who were arrested about 3 weeks ago. And it's the initial intent of the Watson felony murder rule. It's geared more toward DUIs where a fatality occurred. So if you enter a vehicle and you have the reasonable understanding that what you're about to do can cause a fatality, you may be find yourself being prosecuted for second degree murder. And that's something that very few prosecutor offices here in California and in this nation are doing. Some are starting to do that. That's actually happening. So in theory, if someone sells fentanyl, and the more we educate the public and they know that the fentanyl they sold or the laced item they sold resulted in a death, they've now just elevated themselves to the Watson murder rule because they have an absolute knowledge and a clear understanding that this is a very likely possibility. So I think things like that, the more avenues and more lanes you can attack aggressively to bring fentanyl to the forefront where it should have been, the better chance we have for justice, to answer your question. Sam talked about, in some of the research I did, I went back to the DEA's website. And one of the few comments I could find on their site that dealt specifically with fentanyl was dated, I'm going to read it right here to you, back in 2018, where they stopped a guy who was trafficking fentanyl and he had in his possession 12 kilos.
Mm. Oh, my Lord.
Of pure fentanyl, which is very rare. So let's break that down. 12 kilos, 2.2 per pound. That's just over 26 pounds. That amount of fentanyl had the ability to provide a deadly dose to 5.8 million people. Think about that. It's astronomical. Here in Riverside County, about 3 years ago, they made a stop that where they were able to secure and find 2 kilograms of fentanyl. 2 kilograms of fentanyl breaks down to 1 million potential lethal doses of fentanyl. What else out there has this type of fatality effect? I've never seen anything like that in my entire narcotic career, and neither have my partners that I've worked with. This is something new that needs to be on the forefront. Parents, educators, kids, everybody needs to be educated on the deadly effects of this stuff. It's crazy that I had to dig to find this stuff. And thanks to Sam and Laura, there was a catalyst for me to go to dive into this. This information should be the first conversation you're having with your kids, especially if they're going back to school with the pandemic being sidelined a little bit. It's just, you know, if it wasn't for the pandemic, who knows what the numbers would be. That could have a positive, negative effect on it, on the numbers we're looking at. But I know that the pandemic had an effect on law enforcement dealing with this fentanyl issue is what I'm being told. And it makes sense because they had so many other things that they worried about that they had to deal with the last year. So it's just been the perfect storm for fentanyl to come to the forefront and continue magnifying itself. The numbers of these people dying, these kids, anyone messing with fentanyl is doubling every year. And just here in Riverside County next year, they expect at least 500 to 1,000 fentanyl-related deaths by kids who are experimenting with it.
And that's what
Lewis,
is...
Lewis, how are they supposed to... How are the police supposed to function with a three-month lag time on getting toxicology back? Here we are in the most highly taxed environment in the country, and it's 3 months to find out what's killing our children.
Yeah, I don't have it. There's no excuse for that. It's never fast enough. A week is too long. Right. I mean, the process, when they expedite it, you can get it back in 24 hours. So what do you have to do to get this on the forefront, to be the number one top thing on their list that they analyze and get your toxicology back? I don't get that. It doesn't make any sense. You bring up a very solid, reasonable point.
You know, those statistics and that what you were talking about, you know, from 2018, 19, whatever. Remember what Sam said earlier, that in 2021 alone, and it's not far into 2021, we have 4 times the fentanyl coming into this country than we did in 2020.
Yeah.
And it's, then 2021 has barely begun. So I think those numbers are going to be significantly larger than we can even imagine. And that is what is mobilizing me more than anything else, is that, you know, this has got to stop.
Yeah, you're right.
I think what is equally frightening is that, look, as you all have said, young people are going to experiment, right? They're going to do this. But what is really, really frightening me is that a young person thinks that, and even an adult thinks that they're getting, let's say, a Xanax for some issues that they may be having. And they very innocently believe that that is what they're getting, what they thought they bought. And then it is laced with this unbelievable drug that more likely will kill them.
Yes.
And this to me is what is so scary. It's like, what kind of demons are lacing these other prescription drugs, these other drugs, with this deadly fentanyl? And I'm not absolving that any of the other drugs are not deadly, potentially deadly and addictive. I am not, but it's...
Yeah. No, it's a whole army of devils. It's, you know, it's not just one, it's an entire army of evildoers that are making a fortune, and that's all they care about.
It's so overwhelming. And I think, you know, no matter what decade you look at in real time, we have always felt it's like, oh my God, how are we going to manage? And now we've reached almost like a pinnacle of danger that I don't know how we as parents can completely protect our children. I mean, what do you do? I mean, you very openly shared that you believe that your son, Sammy, had been experimenting with weed and that you all talked to him about it. I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'll let you share with us how you dealt with that.
That's right. So we got him a drug counselor and we started drug testing him. So we know that there were no hard drugs in his system before this dealer got to him. And even with marijuana, they're doctoring marijuana with fentanyl. There is nothing that you can get from a dealer that is safe from fentanyl for sure anymore. So all of the things that people used to do that meant nothing, that was part of growing up, can now be deadly. Imagine in our generation, if every person who'd ever tried a Quaalude had a 50% chance of dying, you know, how many would be left anymore? It's just madness. And that's sort of where we're headed.
Yeah.
I know that you both have been very involved with the Facebook page that you mentioned a little earlier called Parents for Safer Children. Mm-hmm. And it is both a public and a private page. And it is the most heartbreaking page.
It's horrific and heartbreaking, but it's also, it's heartbreaking because you see story after story after story, like our son, and not even like our son, you know, people who couldn't get to the dentist during COVID and had horrible tooth pain, and their friend gave them a Percocet to take the edge off until they could get to the dentist, and they died. You know, anything that you take that isn't in a prescription bottle with your name on it could kill you. And that's what people need to know. But what has been really heartwarming about it is that all of a sudden there is this community of over 10,000 parents and advocates and caring individuals that are supporting each other and being there for each other and are ready to be an army to take this on as we get organized to really make some changes. And we are committed to that.
It's thousands of beautiful stories and beautiful faces where people come and have their lost lives be honored. Because when a child gets taken, it's such a waste. And the parents are left feeling like they didn't get their chance. And so to have a public way of showing the face and telling the story, I think helps all of them.
Yeah.
And we were just deluged with families who wanted to share this energy with us. So we almost defensively had to create this venue for all of this outpouring.
It's extraordinary. The stories are very moving. I'm particularly touched by the parents who say, especially the ones who have lost their children after you lost Sammy, how helpful you two have been in this war because of how open you have been. And it has helped however one can heal from this. But that is just, it's such a moving experience. I'm wondering, Dr. Laura, you know, you're a professional without question. You are credentialed. You are so educated. And no one can ever be prepared for a moment like this, but I'm wondering if you have these conversations in your head between the therapist and the mother in you, because you're so many things to so many people and to people who you don't even know, right?
Yeah. I think the hats, although my husband would probably say I don't nearly practice what I preach to everyone else. he gets my non-therapeutic self. But I would say that, you know, my life, and I'm grateful for that, that my life has unfortunately been training for this, that all of the work that I've done with other losses and other, you know, none of which could come close to this one, and grief and, you know, all the work I've done on myself just to heal myself, but also to be a better healer to other people is saving me right now. And, you know, my main job every single day, I make sure I eat, I make sure I exercise, I make sure I do something productive. Today it's this, and I try to be in my body as much as possible and allow myself to feel my feelings, as scary as that is. And for me, that is enough right now.
And you know, we've all had losses, and grief is different for different people.
Yes.
I was really stunned, though, when I read you've been sharing your grief and your grief process through your blogs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was stunned and actually so angry that you've actually received mean and nasty comments from people in this time of massive loss and grief. And you hit it head on, you know. Yeah. And I just don't know how someone can do that to another person at a point like this.
A very damaged person does that, you know, and they have their own demons they're dealing with. But, you know, for me, it has done two things. Share, you know, unfortunately, I share very readily. Anyway, but what I have found is that it helps me to share. But more important, what has been really healing and beautiful for me is how much my sharing seems to help other people, which is why I keep doing it. And so when I put up my snotty videos of me, you know, having just faced something or having just experienced something or on this intensive grief retreat I put myself on, I get hundreds and hundreds of messages from people who are maybe not even grieving a child, but grieving a lost parent or something else in their life, that it is a model for them that, you know, if I can do it, they can do it. And, you know, whether I intended to or not, this is becoming part of my work, but that's my life, heal, learn, teach. And I don't think this is going to be any different.
Sam, how are your other children doing?
They're doing not that great, I would say. I think one of them gets pretty nervous and is worried about accidentally dying because his brother did. And the other one is getting triggered by all of the murder you see on TV. And it's sort of like getting a red sports car. You don't know how many there are out there until you get one yourself. Well, these images of murder are all throughout our society and our media. And so I think he's getting triggered quite a bit by all of that. And I would say I am as well. There's nothing for it except time and feeling your feelings. I think if there weren't some PTSD and some lingering nervousness, sadness, and anger, you know, we wouldn't be human.
Yeah, and we're getting a lot of support where we can. I mean, there's amazing, just angels that have shown up and offered their support and counsel and are there for us, and
We've gotten a lot of help from David Kessler at grief.com, and it's grief.com is a free site for people who are going through grief and is a great resource for your listeners and viewers.
Yeah. And his partner, Paul Denniston, does free grief yoga, which I had no idea even what that is, but that's been amazingly helpful to me. And breath work, you know, all those things that just help move the emotions out of you. You know, so that you can just hold it all a little bit better, you know, I think is so important.
I don't know how you do it.
Five minutes at a time.
I will remember that. I will keep you in my head and in my heart. 5 minutes at a time. Five minutes. You know, I always say this to my son. I said, you know, it's important to plan for tomorrow, but please remember, tomorrow is never promised. Mm-hmm. And, you know, young people don't understand that. No. Older people do. Parents absolutely do, right? And it's like, you know, you want them to fully enjoy their lives as best they can. But my God, the forces are out there and against them at every pivot of their life. You know, we've talked so much about Sammy, but I was wondering if you could just tell us about him.
He was, you know, in some ways I've gotten to know him on a different level after his death because of all the letters and feedback I've gotten from his teachers and classmates. You know, we knew of him, which was that he was a really, really intelligent, super curious. I called him my Renaissance guy because he was like, wanting to figure out how to get his real estate license at 16 while building a self-sustaining biosphere for his chameleon, you know, all at the same time. He was always figuring something out or doing some project. I always found him to be unbelievably intuitive and sweet. But what really touched me is just story after story after story from other kids and even teachers who talked about how unbelievably kind he was. And how anytime there was a kid that was a little off or sad or, you know, he immediately noticed and went over and made him laugh or smile. We've heard story after story about that. I've even heard from some young women who have written me letters and said that he was their friend and he really helped them through an extremely tough time and, you know, made them like talk to them off the ledge. And, you know, he wanted to be a business guy, but he would have made the world's best therapist because he just naturally understood people and understood their hearts and could feel what they felt and cared. He cared a lot and he was hilarious. He was really, really funny.
He sounds like an angel on earth. I'm so sorry that he has been taken from you so soon and in such a violent, violent manner. I'm grateful and thankful to you for the way you have opened up your family, your hearts, your pain, your insight, your advice, without question, is at the very top of the list. I know there are some groups that are very important to you, so I want to make sure that we name them. The Facebook page is Parents for Safer Children, and you've got a private and a public page there. You also told me that you're supporting an organization called Organization for Social Media Safety. It's a nonprofit consumer protection organization started by another parent who's, you know, the beating of his child was placed on social media and how this is a tangent, but it's crimes that are perpetrated for the purpose of getting attention on social media and uploads, right?
Yes.
Which is also very dangerous because it incites more violence.
Yes.
So I know that that's another issue that you all are working very hard on. You're also working to change some laws. Lewis, I know you and I have this conversation a lot, and I always say that it's always the survivors and the families of survivors and victims who tend to have the strongest, loudest, most powerful voice out there for change. Mm-hmm. And
Yeah, very true. Very true. I can tell you, Sam and Laura, for a fact, you don't need to hear this from me. You know this because you're seeing it, you're living it. You are making positive change. Absolutely. In the small circles, law enforcement circles I fly in, and friends, family, parents I know, they've been following Sammy's case and your words. And I know three parents right now who have become that parent that is going to monitor everything that goes on the social media, or there's zero social media. And they struggled with that. And I'm sure that's a representative of other families that are going through the same type of mindset. Do I want to do that? Respect their privacy. I mean, it's a constant battle, but they have changed. And I know that law enforcement is absolutely following this and working harder at addressing a lot of those issues you brought up during this podcast, because the words that you put out there and that you had the guts to go public with. I know that's happening. Let's hope it keeps going. But I just think it's amazing that how you've been able to transform this pain into purpose.
Thank you, Lewis. And you're one of the angels that has appeared in our lives and have been an amazing help in helping us weed our way through this and understand law enforcement and crime in general, which is a world we never wanted to be involved with.
The system is not fair. Never. I said this on the last podcast. The system is not fair to the survivors, their families, the victims' families. It is a completely lopsided system. When it comes to justice, there never can really be any justice. But someone needs to pay. This can't just go on a list and a pile of yet one more young person who has lost their life. It is not okay. And because you too have the ability to amplify this, you speak for so many parents who don't get this opportunity, right? And look, I'm sure it's very hard. I'm not pointing the finger at the Santa Monica Police Department right now. I'm sure it is very hard for every police department in this country to deal with the overwhelming number of deaths that are drug-related that they need to investigate because they died innocently, not intentionally, innocently, yet they do not have the resources. They can't even find their inner strength, but they have to. I mean, we cannot lose our humanity here.
The police around the country have to start treating overdose scenarios like a potential homicide now because of the fentanyl addition.
Yeah.
Yes. And Lewis, I want you to help me here because, you know, we asked the Santa Monica Police Department very clearly, you know, we asked them for an update on your case, an update on the investigation. Of course, it's ongoing. Pray to God that they find the person or persons responsible for this. And we want to make sure we understood how this investigation, Sammy's death, is classified. And they said it is classified as a death investigation. Now, Lewis, based on what Sam has just said, can you explain to us at what point, how does something like this move into a homicide? And as I would advocate, all these deaths from the very beginning should be treated as homicides. And yes, that is being sent out to the Santa Monica Police Department very specifically, because that is how I feel.
Yeah, well, it's a true statement, Anna. Look, in investigation 101, every homicide school you go to, every homicide I've ever been to, what I've been taught, what I've taught other homicide investigators, it's just very basic. They make it look at it as an overdose, but you have to address it the minute you walk and you approach that scene as a potential homicide, because you may lose so much information, so much potential evidence, forensic or otherwise, if you don't. So I don't know how it can be classified anything other than a potential homicide. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But you have to address it as a homicide first. It's an unattended death. So you don't know exactly what caused that death until the toxicology comes back. And if that takes 2 months, and sometimes it takes 2 or 3 months to get back, you're going to wait for that before you start a homicide investigation, before you try to go back and take that first bite at the apple again. So I think they're being careful with the words they choose. But I would like to think that they, well.
Yeah, that's not criticize. Let's not criticize the Santa Monica police, because they're in the middle of their investigation and they can't say everything. Yeah. Our understanding is that they're being quite diligent.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I hope that I didn't come across as suggesting otherwise. I am, though, advocating that when these deaths occur, that I think it would be a great idea if they were all classified as homicides from the very beginning. And I say that directly to the Santa Monica Police Department and every police department across the country. Lewis, there is one thing I need your help on here. If it's determined when the toxicology reports come back and Sammy Chapman did die of a fentanyl poisoning, does that then make it possible to turn this into a homicide? Is that where this potentially changes?
Well, we're back to the felony watch and murder rule as a possibility. There are other lanes there. But look, we'll take it back to a more basic level. If you give somebody cocaine and it's a heavy dose and you supply it to a child and they overdose and die, those have been prosecuted as homicides. This is nothing new. So I'm so foggy on why this is an issue to investigate something like this and why prosecutors aren't, a lot of them haven't traditionally been going after these type of cases of the homicide. So yes, I think it'll help pointing in that direction, but it's by itself, there's other factors that are going to come into play.
That's right. You have to prove intent, and that can be challenging, which is why the Watson rule and Senate Bill 350 in California would be such a big help in implementing the Watson rule for first-time drug dealers.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And this reminds me, I remember when Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, you know, when they first started, you know, everyone was like, ah, I just went out for a couple of cocktails kind of thing, right? You remember the pushback against them? Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but what a diligent group of mothers, survivors, right?
Nothing more powerful than angry mamas.
Every city, every state, they organized. Yes, they organized. They changed laws. They made it possible to up the charges for these deaths, that it wasn't just a sidebar result of an accident because you were drunk. No, no. Yeah. You knew you were drunk. You drank too much. You got behind the wheel. That was deadly. So yeah. my hope is that you too will be as powerful as that group was in its time to change laws, to support other families.
Yeah.
Because
we hope that we are as well. I will tell you that Mothers Against Drunk Driving is on this fight as well. In mm-hmm. fact, the head of MAD is testifying in the Senate subcommittee hearing about this bill to add a special warning for first-time drug dealers.
And people have asked me, you know, would you feel justice if they when they catch this guy, you know? This guy is going to be caught, whether he's caught in relation to our son's case or he has his own karma, you know, whatever happens there is going to happen. To me, you know, it doesn't matter because it's not going to bring our son back. But what is justice is making these kinds of changes and same, and each child's life that our son's story can save, that is the only justice that really matters.
It's incredible. I want to give out that police phone number because I promised you that I would give this out. We're also going to include this in the description box. This will be both on YouTube and audio. So the Santa Monica Police Department have asked anything. If you have any information related to Sammy Chapman's death, you're asked to contact the Special Investigations Unit at 310-458-8455 or the Watch Commander line, which is 24 hours in case it's an absolute emergency, like it's happening right now in front of your face. You know what's happening and you need to call someone. Plus 911, the number is 310-458-2249. We are also going to make available the organizations which you are supporting in the Facebook page, which we have discussed. So people who sadly may need to visit, they can get more information there. Dr. Laura, I know that you are writing about this. You are also your podcasts. You are dealing with this in a way that is helping the rest of us. Where can people find out more information about you to get this kind of help and support?
Well, they can always come to my website, which is just my name, drlauraberman.com. But I'm also posting several times a day, whatever's happening or whatever's coming up or whatever information we can put out there. And that's on all platforms at Dr. Laura Berman.
Okay. Sam, what would your parting words be here?
Just watch your kids' social media, because there's a lot more coming through there than parents know. And adults are interacting with our kids there. So do monitor it. It's a hard thing to do, but it's worth doing.
Just as we were getting ready to record, Instagram released some information that they are now blocking adults from direct messaging minors on Instagram. They're making some changes.
Great.
You know what I think in the back of my head, because I say nothing is coincidence, mostly nothing? You too. You too.
Sammy.
Sammy, right?
The voice is being heard. This loud, angry chorus that is powerful that you are leading. I believe in my heart that the two of you are making these changes. I believe it in the most painful way. You are paying the most any parent could ever pay.
Yeah, we are.
And I'm so truly, in the deepest part of my heart, so truly sorry for your loss.
Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, and we're very grateful for your help in getting the word out, and Lewis as well, for all his help.
Oh my God, Lewis is an angel on earth without question. Lewis, where can people find you? Because you're always donating your time to a good cause, no matter what. You always pick up the phone for someone in need.
Thanks, Anna. Get my entire social media footprints at getbitinvestigations.com. And I agree with Sam and Laura. Parents, educate.
Don't be afraid. Take their privacy away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. You can find me at Anna G News on all social media platforms. It is not lost on me the irony that we are all giving our social media addresses while we at the same time are discussing the trouble with social media.
Yeah. Well, that's good. There's a lot of good that can be done, but they have to step up, these companies, and we have to step up to help protect our kids until they do, or even when they do.
It's just like a vaccine. You need a little bit of it to cure what's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. We can, if we use it safely, properly, and with protocols, it can be a helpful tool. As always, you can find our content on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and of course on YouTube. You can get updates and subscribe to our YouTube channel or our newsletter at truecrimedaily.com. Until next week, this is True Crime Daily, the podcast. I'm your host, Anna Garcia. And as we always say, don't do crime.